what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us for this hour our good friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who I introduced during the last hour. Only he wasn't the guest, but today he is. And right now, of course, Dr. Cuddy had taught at the university level. He was in the Department of Education during the Reagan years. He's testified before Congress. He's certainly one of the outstanding researchers on what's going on today. You'll see his articles there at newswithviews.com. We carry all of Dr. Cuddy's books that are in print at the present time on mental health screening, both pamphlet and the book, and then his book, Cover Up. We still have copies of it, and before long we're going to be asking you to help us get copies of his other books out, but that's a project that's coming down the line very soon. Under many circumstances, without further ado, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us now, we're going to be talking about your latest uplink there on the latest article on mental health screening.
Sure. Uh-huh. The topic is global integration, and it's a very specific term. And the reason I'm using that is oftentimes when people talk about is there a movement towards a world government or whatever, the usual rhetoric is, well, I'll give a quote by David Rockefeller, and it's important to do that, or Colonel House, or John J. McCloy, or Woodrow Wilson, or FDR, and they're very extremely important because they demonstrate in the words of the people themselves what's going on, such as in a previous program we had when I was talking about David Rockefeller's own memoirs, that's the title of his book, published in 2002, where he used the specific words of being involved in a secret cabal and conspiring against the best interest of the United States to bring about a global integrated political structure, which means a world government, and global integrated economic structure. And he used all those words in one sentence, and then the very next sentence he says, if that's the charge, I stand guilty and I'm proud of it. And those are important, but oftentimes the listeners to these programs will wonder, he's trying to have this world government, or Woodrow Wilson is warning about, or FDR is talking about a financial element in our larger centers that's owned OWNED, our government, ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. But oftentimes what doesn't occur, and I thought I would go through it as an example here, is the sort of nuts and bolts of how it actually transpires, oftentimes without the public knowing it, or below the radar screen, and we can pick up on that after the break.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And, of course, the tragedy is that most people have no idea what's going on. They don't understand that the current effort to pass new immigration laws has to do with globalism. It has to do with destroying the sovereignty of the United States. When President Bush tells us, of course, we're involved in bringing democracy to the rest of the world, what he's really doing, of course, is talking about the destruction of the sovereignty of America and transforming America from a republic, which we are, into a democracy we will fit in with all the other democracies, the New World Order, the New World Religion, the destruction of Christianity. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who's taught at the university level, who has worked with the Department of Education during the Reagan years, who's testified before Congress. He is certainly a prolific writer. We carry a number of his books, and you can see his articles at newswithviews.com on a regular basis. But today we're going to be talking, well, about this whole move towards global government. And with that, we see the destruction of America's sovereignty. And the average American said, oh, this could never happen. happen. No, we've heard this, all this conspiracy talk. We hear all this, this talk, but nothing really to worry about. After all, President Bush would never allow that to happen. And I would say this is not a conspiracy. All you need to do is read what the people in the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and the people in all of these organizations talk about. They are quite open. It's not a conspiracy. They want a world government. They want to do away with national sovereignty. They want to join the United States with Mexico. And, of course, just to do away with our borders. Go to the Council on Foreign Relations webpage and look up Building a North American Community. We're going to do away with immigration. We're going to have migration. We're going to have to change the American monetary system from the dollar to the Amero. They're open about what they're doing. They're not conspiring. They're working for a goal. And anybody who doesn't see it has to be incredibly blind, and yet they feel that we're so foolish. We have no idea. And the average American is much more interested in who's going to win the World Soccer Cup than whether America will survive as a free nation. Dr. Cuddy, pick up the story.
Sure. You're right on target there. And when you mentioned the Council on Foreign Relations, the way I lead into this particular subject of global integration, as the title I've given it, was from my previous News with Views column, which is the Mental Health, Education, and Social Control, Part 31. And I had concluded that one by referring to CFR President Richard Haass, H-A-A-S-S. And he had, as I quoted him in the previous part, Part 27, he talked about that nations must be, quote, must be prepared to cede, C-E-D-E, meaning to give over, some of their sovereignty. Well, when he was director of policy planning staff at the U.S. State Department under the current president, President Bush, he delivered a speech, didn't get much attention at the time, but it was titled Defining U.S. Foreign Policy in a Post-Cold War World. They try to avoid that term, New World Order.
Hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment as we pick up our other stations. Well, Dr. Stan and our guest is Dr. Dennis Kennedy. He's talking about, of course, the director, chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, Mr. Haass, and pick the story up.
Sure. The president of the CFR, Richard Haass, had been a few years ago the policy planning staff director at the U.S. State Department under current President Bush, and he delivered a speech, didn't get much attention, called Defining U.S. Foreign Policy in a Post-Cold War World. That was on April 22 of 2002, and he delivered it not to the CFR, but to the Foreign Policy Association, sort of a sister group of the CFR. And in there he explained, and I'll just read this quote, quote, there clearly is a consistent body of ideas and policies that guides the Bush administration's foreign policy. This coherence exists and can be captured by the idea of integration. Integration is about bringing nations together and then building frameworks of cooperation and, where feasible, institutions that reinforce and sustain them even more. Integration reflects not merely a hope for the future, but the emerging reality of the Bush administration, end quote. And the way I conclude my previous article on News with Views is I say, once the nations of the world become, quote, integrated, quote, economically and in other ways, it will not be difficult for the power elite to argue that these integrated entities should be managed by a world government. And so that's the topic. This global integration is the title that I give my current article on newswithviews.com, which I posted today. And the point of this is, as I indicated, that oftentimes people will give quotes of David Rockefeller or somebody saying, you know, we want a world government. And sometimes they give a sort of general outline. But I thought it would be useful in this case to show a specific example of how this is proceeding step by step with, as you said, the American public pretty much oblivious to it. They want to just be entertained, kept fat, dumb, and happy watching, you know, World Cup soccer or the Stanley Cup playoffs or whatever it is. And so what I mentioned at the beginning of this column, global integration, is that you need to remember, like Carol Quigley said, Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown, that you ought to be able to kick the rascals out, meaning at the federal level of our government, without really changing anything. And so this subject of global integration is not just something that the current Bush administration is pursuing, but the Clinton administration as well, and previous administrations also. And their plan has been globally to integrate regional economic arrangements and then advocate their management by world socialist government. And so I thought the example I would give, and you could do this pretty much with any of these, but the example that I use is the integration of the U.S. And Europe, and how that would occur at a practical level. And what I've done here basically is reproduced a column that I had in the Congressional Record. Congressman Henry Hyde placed this in the Congressional Record for me on July 14, 1998. Prior to that, Congressman Hyde had also put into the Congressional Record a sort of history that I had done of the school to work movement, which back in the mid-90s was a very hot topic, still should be because it's still ongoing. But Goals 2000 and School to Work were passed during the Clinton administration in 1994, and I thought I'd give the history of that movement because there's more to it than meets the eye. But in this case, Congressman Hyde put this in on July 14th, and I entitled this the New Transatlantic Agenda to show how this works. And basically what happens is, under school to work, because a lot of this is a combination of economics and education driving this particular venue forward, at the national and state levels, what you have is a fairly good record by a lot of people, Charlotte Isabritt and other fine researchers, about what's going on there. But not too much had been written about the international connections to this and how this really fit into this world government plan. And so what I put down was that on May 18th of 1998, the White House had released a statement at the conclusion of the U.S.-European summit in London, indicating that, quote, through the new transatlantic agenda created in 1995, the United States and the European Union have focused on addressing the challenges and opportunities of global integration, end quote. Now, there's that term again. You'll hear that pop up all the time, global integration. Now, remember, this is an agreement called the New Transatlantic Agenda. It's over 10 years old, and my guess is a lot of listeners to your program probably have never even heard of this. This may be the first time they are hearing of this formal agreement called the New Transatlantic Agenda, calling for this global integration. Well, one part of this integration in 95 was the agreement between the U.S. and the EC, the European Community, establishing what they call the cooperation program in higher education and vocational education and training. And now, this agreement was signed on December 21 of that year, that'd be 1995, and it called for, quote, improving the quality of human resource development, transatlantic student mobility, and thus portability of academic credits.
And of course, I think most people don't understand, we are no longer people. We are simply human resources. We no longer have any worth as individuals. We're simply we have become a resource to this elite that wants to rule the world. And these are people of great wealth who have a different world agenda because they have a different world vision, because they worship a different God, and they believe that they should rule the world. And so we are human resources, just simply human resources.
That's right. Other terms are human capital and so on that they refer to us, human beings, people, in those terms. Because, you see, resources have to be managed. You get the picture here. You manage resources, so you manage people. And so if you understand the terms they're using, also this transatlantic student mobility. Remember now, this is an exchange, students going from Europe to here, from here to Europe, and thus it says the portability of academic credits. Now, to have portability, meaning you can take it with you, of academic credits, there has to be some sort of standardization, right? You have to be able to say, yes, we in Brussels will recognize these particular courses and your grades coming from Chicago. And so, therefore, you have to have this international standardization of education. So this joint committee that it formed, that I just mentioned, said they would reach decisions by consensus. In other words, compromise. In other words, the people in America would have to compromise with the people in Europe, reaching this consensus for this joint committee of this new transatlantic agenda, this agreement, this cooperation program in higher ed and vocational education and training. Now, as part of this new transatlantic agenda, the U.S. and the European Union convened a conference, and that was titled Bridging the Atlantic People-to-People Links. And that occurred on May 5 and 6 of 1997. And what it called for was, quote, thematic networks for curriculum development, quote, and further stating that in an information-based global economy, quote, governments too, that means also, T-O-O, are obliged to adapt their economic, training, and social welfare programs, end quote. So pay attention now to the key words. There's going to be a network. The curriculum development is going to be managed by consensus. In an information-based global economy, governments, that's the governments, state governments, local governments, federal government of the U.S., of Denmark, Holland, wherever, are obliged to adapt, that means change, we got to change, our economic training and social welfare programs. Now, that entails just about everything. To the extent that education is largely becoming training under school to work, training for a job, you have to, take certain courses to be a welder, electrician, or whatever, if you want to get out of high school. Economic, remember, you have to adapt your economic program. That's everything that influences our economy in this country. And your social welfare programs, that's your health programs, health and human services. In our federal government, you're going to have to change them. That word adapt means change. So what basically we agreed to over 10 years ago was that we, our government, U.S. government, state governments, local governments, are going to have to change our economy, our educational training, and our social welfare programs, meaning our health programs, to fit by consensus with the Europeans.
But of course, Congress didn't do this. The people didn't agree to it. It's all done by this faceless bureaucracy, the real rulers of the world.
That's right, and that's excellent. That's the point I'm making here. That these things are sort of like the World Trade Organization and GATT. They literally tell these unelected bureaucrats in Europe, they tell our Congress, you will have to change your laws, and we do. They order us. President Clinton, in terms of foreign policy, I've given a quote in the past from October 19th of 1993 where he says, and this is President Clinton, we're trying to see how we can do all the UN ordered to do. So the UN is ordering President Clinton to do something, and so he's going to have to do that. And so here we're getting down to the nuts and bolts. It's not just, you know, a foreign policy that we're trying to get the UN to cooperate with in Yugoslavia or somewhere. This literally is saying the U.S. government is going to be obliged, that's the word, obliged to adapt, meaning change, our economics, our education, meaning training, and our social welfare programs, including health and everything else. We are going to have to change, and we've agreed to this. Now, in this conference report, the conference I mentioned was this Bridging the Atlantic People-to-People Links. In the conference final report, it noted that in the U.S., an organization called ACHIEVE, that's the name of the outfit, A-C-H-I-E-V-E, has been one of the organizations at the forefront of the defining key issues in this regard and developing strategies to address them. And after the break, I'll explain how they do that.
And of course, these things go on behind the scenes. You're not going to read about it in the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal, supposedly conservative, but they're really not conservative. They're controlled by the same people who control the other major branches of the media. The media is all controlled. Five mega corporations control 95% of the media today and determine what the American people think and believe. Well, this is Dr. Stan, Dr. Cuddy. Please, Dr. Cuddy, pick up the story.
Okay, what I had mentioned as part of this conference that was the new transatlantic agenda and Bridging the Atlantic, and they referred to this organization called ACHIEVE. Some of your listeners probably are familiar with that, but I'll just hit the high spot because you actually have to have somebody to implement this. It's one thing to have a conference and say, you know, we agree too, but then who's going to do it? Well, the who's going to do it turned out to be through ACHIEVE. this organization that would set international academic standards. And you're listening saying, well, you know, who's the chief? That was really brought about by some governors of the states, including one of the governor of the state that I'm in, along with some key business leaders. Lou Gerstner of IBM at the time, head of that, was one of them. And they literally said, Gerstner, for example, said, we're going to base our future decisions as to whether to build a factory or expand a factory in California, Pennsylvania, wherever, based on whether you, your state, goes along with what we say. So in other words, this is coercion. You know, if you're in California and you want a factory, IBM or some other major corporation, well, I'm sorry, you're not going along with these academic standards, these international standards that we've determined you have to go along with, and so you're not going to have a factory expansion or a factory location in California or wherever, whatever state it is in. So that's what this organization has been using. And this conference that I mentioned, this Bridging the Atlantic of the new transatlantic agenda, says this is the organization that is at the forefront of defining these key issues. And what they've done is they've measured, has measured and reported each state's annual progress in establishing these internationally competitive standards which Achieve came up with. And the business leaders, as I said, involved have indicated their commitment to consider the quality of those standards as to their future business decisions. Okay. Now, part of this conference was called the Partners in a Global Economy Working Group. They always have these long, fancy titles. And what this part of the conference, that NTA, National New Transatlantic Agenda Conference, discussed was, quote, what redesigning of curricula required, what career skills are needed, for example, the portability of skills certificates, and institutionalizing cross-national learning training activities. Now, that's, you know, that's edu-speak. Basically, what it means is the curricula that you're going to use in whatever state you're in is not going to be your own anymore. It's going to be arrived at by consensus by these people to meet these international standards. For example, what career skills are needed. You're going to have portability of skills certificates. In other words, your state is going to have to agree to have a certain school-to-work program where you will have measured your skills as a welder, electrician, whatever, and they will have to be agreed to by consensus with Europe to be recognized for portability, meaning if you want a job, let's say, in a particular location, that will have to be recognized, whether it's in Brussels, Belgium, or Topeka, wherever it is. And so that this furthers this internationalization, and then they want to institutionalize cross-national learning training activities. In other words, the learning activities will be cross-national. You will have to learn, or some people have to learn in Europe.
Pull that off right there, please, right now. Well, Rogers, Cuddy is simply telling us how this whole decision has been made, that we would have standardized teaching as far as, say, welding, and you'd have to learn how to weld. Exactly everybody in the United States would have to learn exactly the same things that they would in Europe, and this thing would be true as far as all jobs is concerned. We would have international standards as far as education, and you wouldn't be able to get a job unless you had a certificate. This is all about doing away with individual freedom. Everything is to be regimented. Everything is to be centrally controlled by the ruling elite. But the average American doesn't understand. These decisions have already been made long ago without either our knowledge or our consent. So pick up the story, Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. And people, there's a term that I heard often when I was in Washington with the federal government. That is, personnel is policy. The people carrying out something often determine how it will be handled. And the reason I'm saying that is a lot of your listeners may be familiar about 16 years or so ago with a fellow named Mark Tucker. He was at the National Institute of Education just before I got up there. And when he left there, he became president of what's called the National Center on Education and the Economy. And Rockefeller was part of that. As well as Mario Cuomo, and like I said, the governor of the state that I'm in, he was like vice president of the outfit. But other people on there as well, like Hillary Clinton. So if, let's say, Hillary Clinton were to run in 2008 and become president, she would logically further this agenda. And the reason I mention that is a lot of the goals that they set up in Goals 2000 were developed by these people, Mark Tucker and others, with this National Center. Same thing with School to Work. And Tucker is on what's called the National Skills Standards Board. They're the ones in this country who actually set the standards for skill training. Another individual who was on that board is Carolyn Warner. She used to be, about 30 years ago, the superintendent of schools for Arizona. And I have a quote from the Arizona Republic newspaper back in the mid-70s where she is saying that teachers are to be honored more than parents, because parents just have the children, but teachers teach them the art of learning. So you get this sort of elitist concept there on the part of these people. They know what's best for all of us. They're going to tell us what to do. They're going to manage our lives, tell us what skills we have to have, and what jobs will be available.
And I think that's really so important, the fact that they're going to determine what jobs are needed, and they're going to train people for those jobs. And let's say you wanted to be a doctor. You wouldn't be a doctor unless they said, we need a doctor. You would not be able to go into a specialty unless they said, we need that specialty. And all of this will be determined by a faceless bureaucracy. Let's imagine that you want to go out and you want to go into business on your own. Well, there are no business jobs. You can't be trained for that. You know, we need somebody as an orderly in the hospital, and so that's how you should be trained. And, of course, it will depend upon your ability, your natural capacity. They will determine the life of your children. People say that could never happen, and yet it happens in communist countries throughout the world, and seems to be that's just what they intend here, don't you think?
Yes, there's, I don't have it in this column, but since you said what you said, I'll bring it up. There's a book called Frames of Mind, and it's by Howard Gardner. And what's interesting about that fellow is he, right at the end of that book, I think it's like on the last page, he basically said what you just said. He said, if you have an inclination, let's say you're an eighth grader, 13 years old, and your school system is requiring you as you go into high school, you make some sort of career path choice. Now, the high school always say you can change, you know, you're not locked into it. The problem is, you know, if you change, say, after 2 years, then, you know, what happens? How do you get that skill credential with only 2 years left? So what they found in Germany was that the youngster often, you know, let's say they were preparing to be a baker, and they went ninth grade, 10th grade, and then say, well, I don't want to be a baker, but, you know, if I change now, I've got to start all over in the, you know, health orderly track or whatever it is, so I'll just stay and be a baker whether I want to or not. So it's not that simple. But let's say you're in eighth grade and you're going to pick a particular track. Well, Gardner, according to his theory, and he's very important in this. I mean, he's written about Chinese education. He loves it over there in communist China, what they're doing. He says, if a student has an inclination in a particular area, but the society, the state, whoever needs him in another area, the youngster should be pushed into that other area. And I can give an example after the break as to how that's actually happening.
And of course, I think that's so important for people to understand that any free choice of the individual will no longer exist. Everything is to be regulated, and this is basically what Plato had talked about, you know, 2,300 years ago in his Republic, a ruling oligarchy. And so many of the people today are simply disciples of Plato, carrying out this nightmarish scheme where freedom as we've known it and enjoyed it in America will simply, and very, very soon, become simply a remembrance of things past. People who say it couldn't happen, ladies and gentlemen, it is happening, and the average person is totally oblivious. We're too concerned about the World Soccer Cup. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Dennis, please pick up the story there.
Sure. The example before the break that I mentioned was there literally has been, this is just one of as many, there was this girl in Las Vegas, and she wanted to be a veterinarian. But the school system said, well, we need bartenders, and so it literally pushed her in that direction. You know, well, I'm sorry, we're, you know, offering this bartending track here, grades 9 through 12, and There's openings there, and we've already got enough going into the veterinarian track, and so you really should go into this other venue over here. So you will find all across the country they're doing that. If you don't believe it, try checking out your school system. See if they don't have some sort of a vocational track that they're pushing. I mean, you can go into a college prep track, but if you're not going into a college prep track, and whether you realize it or not, most youngsters don't finish 4 years of college education, so they're going to wind up getting into some sort of occupational area, some sort of occupational track anyway. I think something like only 25 to 30% of the youngsters starting out in school actually get a four-year college degree, so the others are going to be literally the bakers, the candlestick makers, and so on. And so the school system, if wherever you are listening to this, if you're in Monterey Bay Area, whatever, you'll probably find there's some sort of workforce development committee in your school, in your economic area, that's determining what your future needs are economically, and they'll probably have some sort of board there, and they'll probably have a link to your school, and the counselors will work with them to go into particular industries which they think are important for them for the future, you know, that sort of thing. And so you'll find youngsters are being pushed into those areas. And to broaden it out then, what you have is this National Skills Standards Board. And on its website, if you look at it, you'll find this. This is, I wrote this about 10 years ago. It's in the Congressional Record, 1998. One finds what's called a Smart Cards Project Forum. Now, under that, you'll read this, quote, "The Tavistock Institute and the European Commission are working on a feasibility study to research the effect of using smart cards in competence accreditation. The study will be carried out in the USA and parts of Europe," end quote. Now, what does this project involve? It involves assessing and validating these skills, the student's skills, with information placed on personal skills smart cards, which, quote, "become real passports to employment," end quote. And so the question that I ask in this this article is, if without a passport one cannot enter a country, does this mean without a skills passport one may not be able to get a job in the future?
All right, you hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Well, Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy was saying that certainly in Las Vegas there was an instance recently where a girl wanted to be a veterinarian and going to high school. Oh, no, you can't go to veterinarian. You've got to become a bartender. We've got lots of veterinarians, and so they're pushing her to become a bartender. She doesn't want to become a bartender, but that's what the school wants her to become because they need lots of bartenders in Las Vegas, and they don't need any more veterinarians. So pick up the story there.
Sure, and once again, the words are very important in the quote. Remember, we've talked in the past about Tavistock. Well, here they are raising their head again. They're developing these smart cards in competence accreditation. That word accreditation is often used to cut out people. You know, I'm sorry, you homeschoolers, you're not accredited, things like that. And so what they're accrediting here is competence. You have to have a skills competence, and it has to be accredited. And this is Tavistock smart card saying whether you meet their criteria based on this consensus that is developed by this joint committee of Europeans and Americans. And what they assess is your skills. They're going to validate your skills. If you don't have a valid skills, I'm sorry, you can't be a welder wherever you are in San Francisco or whatever. And your skills are placed on the smart card, you know, all of your data, your educational data. And these skills become what they say is real passports to employment. Now remember, they don't use these words casually. When they use a word like passport, they mean literally that. And that's why I raised the question of, if you have to have a passport to enter a country, does that mean without this skills passport you can't get a job? It's similar to other things that that we've talked about, like when they say we're going to have our youngsters, Rod Page, President Bush's first Secretary of Education, said, We're rejoining UNESCO because now we'll have all our youngsters trained to be citizens of the world. That's not an idle statement, that word citizens. It's not inhabitant. It's not resident. A citizen has legal obligations. So if you are a citizen of California, let's say, you have to obey the laws of California. So if you're going to be a world citizen, you're going to have to obey world law. These words that they're adopting here have meanings. Okay, so in October of 97, this article that I did, the Tavistock Institute and Manchester University over in England, they completed a final report for the European Commission. And in there, described a report summary where the relevancy, now remember, this is Tavistock, Manchester, and England. They talked about the relevancy of Goals 2000, that's the U.S., SCANS, that's the Secretary's Commission on Achieving Necessary Skills in this country, the Secretary of Labor in this case. And let me digress just for a minute. In case you think these people know what they're doing, they really don't. I'm going to stop right now in the middle of what I was listing here from this quote about Goals 2000 SCANS, because I want to give you just one example of SCANS. Now, these are the geniuses in our Department of Labor that came up with these SCAN skills, Secretary's Commission on Achieving Necessary Skills. One of those skills is they tell you how to do everything. There's one on manure handling for farmers. Another one is on how you feed cows. They literally say, now these are the people who are determining your skills. Wherever you are listening to this show, they're going to tell you how you're going to feed cows. They literally say in this book, and I've got the book here, they say you feed cows by attaching milkers to them. That's how you feed cows, according to these experts, these geniuses.
Well, of course,
I've never heard of anybody trying to feed a cow by attaching a milker to him.
Well, what they really mean, of course, the milker would be also, he will milk the cow, then he will feed the cow. It's only logically you do. You don't want two people to do that. You have one, because you can't feed them when you're milking. You can't milk them when you're feeding them. So, you know, the milker will feed the cow. But, I mean, this should be so rudimentary. Why do we have to have government bureaucrats telling us how to feed cows?
Well, in case you were, you know, making a joke there, the word is attach. They said you feed a cow by attaching a milker to them.
Right.
In other words, they think that, you know, milking the cow is feeding the cow. So anyway, moving on with this quote, the relevancy of Goals 2000, SCANS, that's I just described that, typology, with its quote, this is their quote, profound implications for the curriculum training changes that this will require, and it will. There will be profound changes. I mean, this is 10 years ago, so this is already happening. And it goes on saying valid skill standards and portable credentials, quote, benchmarked to international standards, such as those promulgated by the International Standards Organization, ISO, end quote. Now, in case your listeners aren't familiar with ISO, it's been around for over 50 years. I mean, the barcodes that you use, the size of boxes that you can transport on liners, whatever. All of these things have this little ISO code. There are literally international standards concerning just about everything today. As I said, the sizes of boxes, the weights of things, they all have this international standardization number and model attached to them. And so now they're going to do the same thing with your educational standards, and they are going to be promulgated by ISO. Now, this report summary that I mentioned, it goes on to say that, quote, there is increasing attention being focused on developing global skill standards and accreditation agreements. Okay? Now, pay attention to that. Global skill standards and accreditation agreements. In other words, whether you can get accredited in California will depend upon whether you fit with this international agreement of what is required. And it goes on, quote, and there will be, quote, partnerships between government, industry, and representatives of worker organizations, and a high degree of integration, there's that word again, integration, embedding skills within the broader context of economic and social activity, and specifically within the areas of secondary education, work-based learning, and local and regional economic development. The NSSB, that's the National School Standards Board, Goals 2000, School-to-Work Program, are all coming to aid as a catalyst to promote the formation of partnerships to develop skill standards. In this regard, a system like ONET, O and then N-E-T, can be seen as the glue that holds everything together.
Well, I think what's so frightening about this thing, Dennis, is that what we're talking about is central planning. What we're talking about is bureaucrats stipulating every aspect of our lives. This is simply stepping stones along the way to what they had in Russia, and it didn't work. The whole society collapsed. And that's exactly what they're introducing here. Because basically communism is an elitist concept where you have a ruling class and you have a bureaucracy and then everybody else is literally enslaved and told exactly what to do. And they want to tell everybody what they're going to do and how they're going to live their lives. And people say, why, the American people would never accept it. And yet we're accepting it step by step by step.
Right, and I know that was a long quote, so let me just pick out the key words. First off, there was partnership. Now remember, partnership of government and industry. This is sort of a type of fascism here. It can lead down that road. They include worker organizations. You know, there's your workers of the world. There is integration. Remember that word. You're going to embed the skills within the broader economic social activity. That includes everything. These skills are going to apply everything, everywhere, you know, whatever job you go into, activity you're going for. And it's going to be within secondary education largely. That's all of your high schools, where school to work often takes place here. There's going to be work. This is your apprenticeships. It's going to be involved in that. And local and regional economic development. So in other words, your region, your local economic development is going to be linked to and hinged to what they decide in all of these areas that you will do in a total agreement using these programs, Goals 2000, School to Work, and it will develop these skill standards in the sense of a partnership. You'll hear that over and over again. We have to partner with the industry. We have to, governments partner together. You know, we don't have enough money in government, so we'll get together with these industries and we'll partner for all this stuff. And of course, there has to be some sort of single system to bring this all together. And so what it's been for like 10 years is something called ONET. And I describe that at the end of this column, where I say ONET is a new occupational database system sponsored by the U.S. Department of Labor's Employment and Training Administration. It was, when I wrote this 10 years ago, being piloted in Texas, South Carolina, California, New York, and Minnesota. And what it includes in there is information such as worker characteristics, that's your abilities, interests, and work styles, and worker requirements, that's your basic skills, knowledge, and education. All that's together, all that goes on this smart cards that Tavistock was programming and piloting in this country and Europe. So basically, they have this whole thing wired. The whole system's there, all of your information on this card. You're going to have to march to the tune that they've established. And this is sort of my description of the nuts and bolts of how this global integration is being pushed, and has been pushed for at least 10 years, and most people are totally unaware of it.
Well, I think this is really the tragic thing. They do this little bit by little bit. They do it without the knowledge of the people. And one day we wake up and find out that, of course, we're violating the laws if we don't want to go along with their programs. And how many freedoms have we lost little bit by little bit here in America? As the local bureaucrats tell us what to do, how to plant our, you know, when we can cut a tree down, you know, what we can do with our property. Increasingly we see this, and now we're going to see it with the education of our children.
That's absolutely right. And I want to stress that education is just one venue. Remember it said the governments will be obliged to adapt your economic systems. Your social welfare system. So education is just one part of this. This is part of a larger picture. In previous discussions we've had, in previous columns that I've done, I mentioned that immigration was part of this. The guest worker program is a typical example of how this works. You mentioned this, Dr. Stanner, earlier on about immigration. They're going to make it a migration. And one of the things that I quoted was this 1863 document a long time ago, a book where this historian named Motley was writing in the London Times about the conspirators and how they wanted to create a Gulf Empire where you would have the southern part of the U.S. joining with the Central American countries and Mexico and with the Caribbean nations. And the way they put it was to have, quote, unlimited degrowth producing unlimited cheap products, end quote. And so if you look at it today, the guest worker program, knocking down the borders, that's basically what it is. It's just, you know, these are workers. I mean, they're not American citizens, but they're going to do the work in America. And these guest workers, whether it's 3 years away, what do you call it, amnesty, it doesn't matter. It's the same principle. They're here. And what this is if you just substitute the word Hispanic for the word they use, Negroes, basically that's what you've got. They're creating this this sort of regionalization empire, and the guest workers are part of that, and this is all part of this movement, this plan of global integration. There's that term again.
And, of course, what people don't understand, with this comes the loss of our freedom. The Europeans didn't want to accept genetically modified food. They've been forced to accept it, even though all the evidence shows that it's potentially dangerous. Here in the United States, we're not even allowed to know whether the food we buy, the corn, the cottonseed oil, the canola oil, all of these things, whether they contain these genetically altered crops, and most of them do. And there is all sorts of evidence, scientific evidence, that they're harmful to people, and we wonder why we have so much disease, increasing cancer, increasing heart disease, increasing Alzheimer's disease, increasing diabetes in America. And yet, of course, we're told you don't have the right, because the question is, because this has been decided by the World Trade Organization, and Christian, we don't understand. We're losing even the ability of our elected representatives to determine the laws of our land. It's all determined by international faceless bureaucrats who are answerable only to the ruling elite of the world.
That's right, and the ruling elite oftentimes work through not just individuals like a David Rockefeller or whoever, but through organizations. I've mentioned in the past the World Federalist Association, which now has a new title that combined with another group, and they're both together now called Citizens for Global Solutions. But in one of their documents that came out at about the same time I was writing this item that appeared in the Congressional Record, they had what's called the Genius of Federation. And in there, it was the same basic principle. They said they're going to have step-by-step towards global governance, and they would use the UN. That would be a vehicle. But they wouldn't have to go through the process of actually amending the charter. What they would do is through agencies like the International Criminal Court or a UN Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, they said, quote, this is their quote, by means of these voluntarily funded functional agencies, national sovereignty would be gradually eroded until it is no longer an issue. Eventually, a world federation can be formally adopted with little resistance, end quote. And that's basically the principle that they're using here with global integration, with its education or whatever. They go a step-by-step basis. They develop these skill standards. They develop accreditation requirements, things like that. And you say, oh, well, you know, isn't that nice? In case my little Johnny wants to be a computer programmer over in London, sure, that sounds good to me. And so the people go along with this at the local level, and once you become locked into the system and they build a system and place further regulations and requirements, it's just like these people said about World Federation. Eventually a World Federation can be formally adopted with little resistance, because actually we've agreed to all of the essentials of this anyway. Once the U.S. agreed with Europe that they're going to have this integration, that there are going to be these joint decisions reached by consensus regarding what our skill standards would be for being a welder in Dubuque or wherever, once you've started adopting those things and agreeing to those things, you're pretty much far along down the road to the total ball of wax here.
And I think it's so important that maybe Bobby wants to be a computer programmer. What Bobby doesn't understand and his parents don't understand is that under the new immigration bill, hundreds of thousands of people are going to be able to come in with these computer skills from India. And what do you think they're going to do? They're going to work for half of what the computer programmers are getting today. And instead of getting 60,000 to 90,000, they'll be getting 10,000 to 30,000. And all of this is designed to lower the living standards of our people, because the major thrust is for equitable distribution within nations and between nations, equitable distribution of finances within nations and between nations. It's all in the Earth Charter. It's all laid out by the ruling elite, people like Gorbachev and Maurice Strong and Stephen Rockefeller, one of the richest, all three multi-billionaires, all three working behind the scenes. Most people haven't even read the Earth Charter. You can get it on the Internet, or we'll be glad to send you one if you can't get it. Point 10A, equitable distribution. within nations and between nations. And that's what's so important about this. Once we've accepted this, why shouldn't these people from India be able to come in and take all the good jobs? After all, they're well-trained, they can speak English, many of them can, they're bright, intelligent people. But what we're talking about is lowering the living standards of the American people to that of the Indian peasant, or even far lower than that. People say it couldn't happen. It is happening, and that's what all of this fuss about migration is about. There's no longer going to be any problem with immigration. It's all going to be migration, because we're not going to have any borders, and everything will be regulated by the faceless elite. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Kennedy, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, what you just said is very important, because your listeners may say, okay, Earth Charter, you know, flaky New Agers. No, no, no. You have to remember, we've talked about this in the past. On June 25th of 2001, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, that probably means whoever's listening to this, your mayor, whether in San Francisco or Austin, Texas, or Monterey, or you know, Dallas, or wherever, they, by a voice vote, voted to approve and further and pursue these principles, this equitable distribution, redistribution of wealth within nations and among nations. They voted to pursue that. They agreed with it. Yes, we're going to push for that. We, the mayors of the United States, we're going to do this. And so this isn't just something idle that's going on. They've actually pushed that principle in the Earth Charter. We've been over it in the past, but there are many other items in there that are rather dangerous. But anyway, it's all part, like you said, of this sort of global plan, migration, guest workers. We originally, what you said about the computer programmers from India, we were told, okay, we may lose certain manufacturing jobs to Bangladesh, China, whatever, but that's okay. Don't worry, we have high-tech jobs. Well, we're losing the high-tech jobs not only by outsourcing. A lot of these jobs are going to India and are done by... I mean, if you try and call an international telephone company and try and get, you know, directory assistance, probably somebody over in Delhi in India is giving you your answer.
And in fact, I put in... I made some reservations for a Delta flight today, and the fellow was... sure, he was in Bombay or one of the other Indian communities. In fact, all of their airline scheduling is done from India today. But the average, that way we won't have to pay such high wages here in America. That's how Delta is going to survive in the competitive world, while we're simply going to outsource all of our jobs.
And when we're not outsourcing them, as you just indicated, under these HB1, I think it is visas, we're bringing them here.
Right.
If we can't send a job to New Delhi or wherever, we're bringing them here. The Bush administration wanted to up it by over, I think, 100%. The people here. So that just leaves guest work. I mean, that just leaves your lowest service industry jobs. Well, guess what? That's what the guest workers are doing. They're bringing it here. So we've lost the manufacturing. The high-tech jobs are being outsourced, or we're bringing them into this country to do that. And at the lower end, lower-paying jobs, they're being guest-workered. And so Americans are being totally excluded.
Dennis, we're out of time, but God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. And I'm looking forward to having you back here again next week as we begin to explore this planned program, because it is planned, for the destruction of the economic structure of America. Good night. God bless.
Thanks, man.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and believe me, everything that's going on is planned. If you haven't yet got a copy of the Earth Charter, actually, we've included it in our syllabus on the financial tsunami. If you have not read our syllabus, if you have not heard my talk on the financial tsunami, you need to get it. Did you notice the stock market was down 60 or 70 points today, and it's falling, it's beginning to fall and fall, and of course occasionally they'll jack it up when it falls too far, but we are on the edge of a financial precipice, and it is not happening by accident. It is happening by intent, and most Americans are going to be wiped out. That's the plan. They win, we lose. You need to see my talk, and it's available either on DVD or on video, VHS. And then, of course, we have the syllabus that goes with it. If you get the two together, you get it at a decreased price. And, of course, if you ask for the latest Z figures, you'll find out that the debt of this country, I'm talking about state, federal, local car, individual house debt, increased $1 trillion in the last 3 months. And we'll send you those figures if you ask for them. Just ask for the latest figures on the zip. And then, of course, the Earth Charter is there. The master plan written by that great American patriot, Mikhail Gorbachev, who, working together with Maurice Strong, who's one of the most wealthy men in the world, and, of course, ran the United Nations until recently, and Stephen Rockefeller and Nelson Rockefeller's sons, because the Rockefellers have been involved with this occult world movement for so long. They wrote the Earth Charter, which is now kept in the Ark of the Covenant. What's it doing in the Ark of Hope, which is the Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant? Because this is all spiritual, and if you haven't, of course, got our material on sustainable development and seen the Georgia Guidestones and the Ten Commandments that come from the dark side, if you have not, of course, got our other material, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to, they're all available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. The talk on the financial tsunami that comes with a syllabus, and you can get it, of course, by itself, but if you get the two of them together, there's a discount. And then, of course, my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and get the video or the audio tape that goes with it, or get the Brotherhood of Darkness special, which is the audio tape, the VHS or DVD, and, of course, the book itself. And then, of course, you really should get our material on sustainable development, our talk on sustainable development, the syllabus there, and you'll see a lot of the original documents that will show you exactly what the plan is. But they can't let you know that there is a master plan, that there is a ruling elite. You need, of course, to get our talk on world revolution, where we use as the background the book Fire in the Minds of Men, written by the Librarian of Congress. And, of course, he tells you about the secret cult societies behind the world revolution. Now, he limits it to Europe, because he himself is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for a secret society formed by Cecil Rhodes back in 1891. You want to document that? We carry the book written by Bill Clinton's mentor, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, on pages 951 and 952. He tells you about the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations. Came out of the Round Table, which was, of course, a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created. And Cecil Rhodes was deeply involved in the occult himself, as were all the people in the secret society with him. And until people understand, we're really involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, you can't understand anything that's going on today. Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I think most people are going to be wiped out in the coming financial tsunami. We were going to lose, certainly not only our material possessions, but, of course, we're going to lose our freedom unless there's a revival in America, unless the America turns back to God for us. Thomas Jefferson said so well, "I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever." Remember our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like a free newsletter, give us a call. And please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty.